Okay, so Gary, I play the Lion King for the first time for my 3-year-old Xander.
Oh,
He'd never seen the
that's
movie.
all I got.
Maravisibabu. And
Oh.
when okay, we're gonna get in trouble. But here's the thing. I asked him afterwards, who was your favorite character? And he said, Ride Freaky. And now all I can think about is the sexual proclivities of a wise old baboon in the safari. Yeah, so there it is. So now I can't watch The Lion King anymore without thinking about Ride Freaky. By the way, I
Yeah, hey,
played
listen, it's a
Ride
sports show.
Freaky. I played Ride Freaky in middle school. As you can imagine, the only black girl in chorus played Rafiki. And they said when my mother had questions about that, well, it's because she's the only one that would attempt a Jamaican accent. So there it is. I still have issues about that. We're going to move on because tonight we will crown a lioness queen. That wasn't exactly the segue that I thought it was going to be. It kind of
No,
sucked.
crushed it though.
Yeah, it is the WNBA draft. We are so excited. Everybody that watched the 24 million at one point that watched the national championship just 9 days ago, welcome on over to the WNBA draft, folks. These girls don't disappear into the ether. They just move on to the pros where everyone is really, really good. And imagine what that looks like when you inevitably watch. And of course, there's someone that knows that better than anyone. I love this person. She is a stalwart in the game. She is an OG. She's done pretty much every single role you can think of in the women's basketball sport and currently has decided to bless us by just being a host. You know, when she's not having rising media stars, when she's not responsible for the careers of so many incredible women, mentorship, speaking, how she has time to do any of this, I don't know. It is the great, and I'm going to introduce her the same way I say hello to her every time I see her. Just like fine China. The China Robinson is with us.
Oh man, that was the best. I had a lot of really good intros, but singing, L, your voice. We got to get you signed to a deal. Like,
Yeah, right.
where's the deal at? Seriously.
Shower
Yeah.
Records.
Here.
Hey, join me as part of this groundswell of people who want L to drop the singles that she did come out with a couple years ago, but she's got that under
They're
lock
so
and key.
bad.
She won't bless us. She won't bless the playlist, and I don't know why. I don't know
Elle is
why.
so talented. Like
Yeah.
she could do music. She could be on Broadway. She could be an actress. Like the talent abounds.
Hey,
It's
don't give her any
wild.
ideas because she does too much for ESPN. The bosses are like, no, she can't.
Rehab,
No,
yeah,
we
we need
need
you over
her.
here.
You know
No,
what?
we
You know
need
what's
her.
funny is they're saying this, they're gassing me up. They're saying all this. I already know that I can't do those things because I tried, you guys. I've told you I failed at everything and I landed on being a sportscaster. I tried to be on Broadway. I auditioned for Aida. They were like, no, thanks, ma'am. I tried to be a performing star. I performed at the Chili Pepper in Atlanta. China, you know that place from back in the day. And I basically got booed off the stage. So I am exactly where I need to be. And these young women are exactly where they need to be on the biggest night of their lives. They had vision boards about this. And a couple of things to remember as some of you that are listening are probably new to this space. And we love that. And we welcome you here. When it comes to the WNBA, China, there's only 12 teams. So like there are people who are like, oh, she was a star at my school, at my university. Like it bears mentioning that a lot of these young women that you've sort of watched for the last 4 years tear up the college ranks and they're going to struggle even to just make rosters, let alone make an impact right away on the W just because there's so few opportunities.
Yeah, this is a humbling and a little bit of a sobering time for college basketball fans because what makes a great college player doesn't necessarily make a great WNBA player, and it doesn't even necessarily guarantee you a spot on the roster. Elle, you know this. There's been many years that we've had first round draft picks cut. It happens. The game is very different. Now, don't get me wrong, the college game is growing, right? It's faster, it's more athletic. Like we saw the women at the Final Four playing at a very high level. But you take that up two, three, four, five, six notches, and you're playing against women who have international experiences, have played in three or more countries, have played multiple positions on various professional teams. And they're not even 144 spots because some teams are carrying an 11 player roster. So it's more like maybe a 132, somewhere around there. So it's incredibly hard to make a WNBA roster. Sometimes it takes patience. I was thinking about a player in particular, Megan Gustafson, who played at Iowa, who was a tremendous player, won National Player of the Year awards, all of the above. And she struggled to really get her footing in the WNBA, ended up playing on a couple different teams, going overseas, and just built her game over time. And now she's a really valuable asset. And so the transition is tough. And to college basketball fans, come check out the WNBA. Even if your player doesn't make a roster, she could circle back and just appreciate women's basketball at the highest level.
So hard enough, China, for the players to sort of have that game transfer and transition from the highest level, whether it be collegiately or from abroad. So the pressure is with them, but equally as much for these teams, because the margin of error of getting a pick correct, because people think of the NFL draft and it's 7 rounds, and Major League Baseball used to be 50 some odd rounds, and the NBA draft, you know, a handful of rounds, but you don't get that with the WNBA. So with these teams, it's even that much more important to have to hit on your pick, because we have seen first round picks not make the team. And outside of everybody saying Caitlin Clark going to the Indiana Fever, which that's a foregone conclusion, but you're already sort of shaking things up at number two with the with the decision there, with the handful of, you know, names that us as a country who might just be popping into the women's game for the first time got familiar with this college basketball season, right?
Yeah. No, Gary, it goes back to exactly what you just alluded to, and that's that there's a small margin for error in the draft, at least with that initial pick, because you want to get it right. And that's why my strategy when it comes to the top four is take the best talent available. Okay. I understand team need, right? You need a center, you need a point guard, all of that. But versatility is an asset in the W. Size, athleticism, your physical dimensions, those are things that may not show up on the stat sheet that are going to make a difference at the next level. And I really believe if you go best pro-ready talent available at the top four, you're going to be in the best position. And for that reason, yeah, I go with Caitlin Clark at one. I know a lot of draft boards have had Cam Brink at two, but I actually think Rekia Jackson is a more mm-hmm. pro-ready player at 6'2". She's very versatile, can play 2 through 4. She can come off screen. She can rebound. There's so many different places you can put her on the floor. So on a small roster, that versatility mm-hmm. does you well. And then, you know, kind of interchangeably at 2 or 3, I think Camila Cardoso, you can't teach 6'7". You just can't. And when you look at the way the WNBA season went last year, Las Vegas Aces were dominant, but there were some teams that caused them trouble due to matchups. One of those teams was the Dallas Wings. And the reason why they caused them so much trouble was because they have Tierra McCowan and Kalani Brown, like 6'7", you know, right, double 6'7" in the middle.
The trees.
And that was a challenge for Vegas. So you have to have that size. You can't teach that. So I have Rekia Camila at 2, 3, 4. Is a conversation. I love Cam Brink. I would love to see her stay out west in LA. But Angel Reese is always in the conversation for a number of reasons, as is Aaliyah Edwards. So yeah, that's kind of my strategy, but that's when I have my GM hat on, not my ATO hat. So
I love that. I wanna like back up and kind of go a little bit deeper into those things, because mm-hmm. the Sparks have this is a really pivotal draft for them, right? They're in a bit mm-hmm. of a rebuild. I believe their GM is in her first year, coach in the second year, NECA's gone. They need a lot here. And so they're going to have to really nail these two picks. But I also want to go really quickly to the Fever, because I get it. Caitlin Clark is going to, you know, land there. And we keep talking about, you know, sort of how she translate. And I wanted to say, as you were talking about the difficulties of sort of your game translating to the pro level, it's not hating then when someone like a Diana Taurasi or some of these other pros have said, like, is she going to eventually figure her game out? Absolutely. But it's not hating when they're critical about how that translates. And I just am interested to see how she fits specifically on the Fever, a team that maybe people don't know that much about. I mean, They clearly had Aaliyah Boston, and she was the WNBA Rookie of the Year, but they're picking number one overall for a reason as well, right? How does she slot specifically on a team that already has an incumbent point guard in Erica Wheeler? And does how much she was off ball in college help her game translate? Like, how, what kind of impact does she make? Let's take away the, they're on national TV, they're selling tickets, like all that. Just in terms of the game itself, China, is she literally a plug and they're in the playoffs player for this team?
I think Caitlin Clark is a generational talent. So with that being said, it's not how does she fit into the Fever, but how does the Fever build around her style of play? And they do have the pieces to make that work. When you think about the fact that she ran primarily a pick and roll offense in college, she and Aaliyah Boston in a two-player game is going to be incredibly exciting. Hannah Stolke, who was a great floor runner for her at Iowa, they got a lot of transition buckets, played the game fast. That's going to be a 1-2 connection with her and Aaliyah Boston. The speed in the open floor that Kelsey Mitchell plays with at the two spot, like that goes so well with the way that Caitlin Clark plays the game. So there are already a lot of pieces, a lot of fundamentally sound aspects of her offense and their offense that fit together. I believe she will translate very well. Obviously it's going to take some time on the defensive end. I don't think you'll meet a WNBA player that says, oh, I came in and I was money on the defensive end. Like, no, like these women are fast, strong, athletic. That's a place where I expect she may struggle early on. And Christy Sides, who, is the head coach of the Fever, will have to plan schematically for that aspect of her game, but she'll translate well. She can shoot the ball. She passes very well. The physicality of the game, I think with her size, she will have to get a little more strength and girth. But I believe that her talent could lift the Indiana Fever to a playoff spot. I'm not saying they're going to be 1-6. They might slide into 7-8, but she's a difference maker.
China, so understanding that and the pressure that comes with being the top overall pick and being this generational talent, D1 scorer of all time, you're still going to a 13-win, right? Indiana Fever team who had the number one overall pick the year before. Help us temper to the fans who might be watching the WNBA or paying attention maybe very closely for the first time, or they're parachuting in off of the success of this last tournament. Help us temper how long it's going to take for Caitlin Clark to be that person, because we've had the Kelsey Plums and we've had the Sabrina Ionescu's, right? Players and games that are similar in style, and they were the D1 scoring leaders, and then it took them a couple of years in the WNBA to be like, oh yeah, no, I remember this player, I remember this prolific of a scorer, and then they get the all-star nods, so on and so forth. So should we temper these expectations for a year or two or three for Clark?
No, I don't think it will take that long.
Oh, wow.
If I'm remembering correctly, Sabrina Ionescu might have gotten injured a few games into her rookie season, so I think that slowed her progression a little bit. But even though the Indiana Fever only won 13 games, they lost a lot of really close games. That's a story that record doesn't tell. And so that turnaround could happen a little more quickly than maybe people could foresee if you dig a little bit deeper. But no, I don't think it'll take years at all for Caitlin Clark. And every player is different. Like, I don't think it's fair to compare her to Sabrina or others, even a Kelsey Plum, where it took her a couple of years to catch on. I believe that Caitlin is more pro-ready than the players you just named stepping in, at least in terms of her offensive skill set. And that's nothing against them. I just think that the way she plays the game, her length, her size, some of those things lend themselves to her having more immediate success. Will she be the player in the WNBA that she was in college? No. I don't think that she will dominate the WNBA the way she dominated college. I just don't see that happening. I mean, prove me wrong, Caitlin. I'm here for it. And so tempering expectations more looks like a 20-10 night instead of a 40-point triple-double or 30-point triple-double. Tempering expectation looks like, allowing her to navigate some foul trouble maybe early on as she's trying to get her footing on defense, on the defensive end. Some turnovers as she's learning her teammates. Some of the normal things that you can expect in a transition. But no, I don't think it'll take 2 or 3 years for her. Caitlin Clark, I would not be surprised if she's an all-star in this league, if not this season, very early on in her career.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, you look at maybe the two closest comps, because again, you said it, we've all said it, she's generational, so it's hard to have comps, but the closest comps would be Kelsey Plum, whose record she broke, of course, Sabrina Ionescu, and for Kelsey, it was in her, what, fifth year before she was a WNBA All-Star, and Sabrina, of course, she got hurt her rookie year, so maybe it would have been sooner, but it was her third year before she sort of broke through and was playing at an All-Star level. I do want to go back to the treetops, like, the average fan, LaChina's looking at ESPN.com right now. They're seeing Angel Reese's face right next to Caitlin Clark's for this year's draft. Meanwhile, there's some of these, and I know you mentioned her a couple of minutes ago, there's some of these mock drafts that have her going 7, 8, 9, you know, behind J.C. Sheldon of Ohio State, like some of these lesser known names. What is the most concerning part? And I've been privy to some of these conversations that are happening in green rooms with other pros that have some concerns about Angel Reese's game at the next level. Why are they concerned? What's the problem?
The concern is that she's somewhat limited in her skill set. And the WNBA, again, because of the small rosters, the small numbers with the league, we're hoping expansion happens, that you need more players that can do more things. You need interchangeable pieces. You're playing a 40-game season where injuries come into play. So you may need to plug in a player who's traditionally a four at the three spot or the five spot for a couple games. And Angel has incredible tenacity and work ethic. She just has a knack for the ball coming off the rim as a rebounder. Like, she's really special and unique in the way she plays the game, but her offensive skill set is still developing. She's not a player that right away you may be able to give the ball to, you know, at the free throw line at the WNBA level and let her just go and create and cook. She's not going to maybe spot it from the 3-point line in transition. But she has the ability to do that. She wasn't asked to do that at LSU, so it's not a natural part of her game, and that's the concern. This is a question that GMs and coaches often have to ask themselves coming into the WNBA draft is, I see the potential, but what's the development look like? Like, if we draft her, can she develop a 3-point shot? Can she be a go-to player in the post against size? Is rebounding, is that going to just be her specialty and that's it? And there are some teams that need that, right? They need that specialty player that maybe can come off of the bench and, you know, give them rebounding. But I don't think Angel Reese will be happy or satisfied with that. And I think that's the biggest concern is, will her offensive skill set develop to bring more versatility at the next level? Because she doesn't have incredible size. Even though she plays bigger, there's much bigger players in the WNBA pretty consistently.
Sure. But I think it's also not coincidental. A lot of the videos over this last weekend about Angel Reese are like, look at her working on her threes.
Yeah. She was in there with Chris Brickley and three looked good going up. I can't help you, L. Like, it was going in.
It was.
So yeah, but those are the question marks with Angel Reese. But there's so much she brings, even in terms of her attitude and the chip on her shoulder she plays with. Like, What organization would not want a player that just refuses to lose, right? Like, there's been players that have great skill set, but don't have the attitude, don't have the moxie. She's got all of that.
I heard you say rebound a couple of times in the description of Angel Reese. And I just flashed back to the national championship where Camila Cardoso just was living in the paint, right? 17 rebounds. And you talk about size being important in the WNBA because there might be a premium on it. So you're talking about a 6'7" developed senior player. I'm not saying that she's like a sleeper or unheralded because a lot of people have her going top four, but would you distinguish her sort of as that? Like a, hey, don't forget about her top five pick, and she might be a sleeper on whatever team ends up drafting her. Or is there another player that comes to mind when I'm like, when we're talking about, hey, don't forget about this player?
Yeah, you're saying Camila, is she a forgotten piece? Oh my gosh, I hope not. Because <Correct. laughs> you need a 6'7" big girl for sure. In terms of players that I think are maybe not talked about enough, I'm really intrigued by Nika Mule. And in fact, meeting her in person and seeing her size, you know, and she's a little taller than I expected. Watching what she did on the defensive end and then the assist record that gets lost. Like, that's a huge deal that she's got more career assists than Sue Bird. Like, and I know, you know, I don't know in terms of the numbers. I know with the pandemic years, there's been some different things. I don't know if that's the case with her, but she can deliver the ball and defend. and she's got some size to her. And Andrea Carter and I have this discussion all the time, is that there is a point guard shortage in the WNBA, a true point guard shortage. When Sue Bird retired, we said, okay, the pass first point guard is gone, right? Like, we had lost Lindsey Whalen. Like, you just saw the scoring point guard. There was a plethora of them. I still think there's a big need for a set the play up point guard who's going to defend, who's going to pick up, play tough, whose first thought is, how can I get my teammates involved? Dallas's team. And I think they pick at five, maybe, right? I think the Dallas Wings, who's another outstanding point guard. I would say those are two players that I am extremely intrigued with where those two will land, because point guards are at a premium. A lot of teams need one. They don't want to admit it. They feel like, okay, we can just give it to our two guard, let them bring it up. I like a two point guard. I like a pass first point guard. And that, for that reason, Nika Mule and JC Sheldon should not be forgotten about. And I would be shocked if either one of them is left on the draft board the second round.
Yeah, Michael Vopel, for his part, is with you, has Nika Mule at 11 going to the New York Liberty, who he says, you know, needs some good perimeter defense. But you're right. I wondered if the recency of what we all just witnessed Nika do to Caitlin Clark, because Raven Johnson put the clamps on Caitlin as well, but Raven had help, right? Like, Raven was able to, there was other people, there was like people to come and like take the mantle. Nika Mule just agitated Caitlin Clark for 40 minutes in the final four. And she is just an incredible defender. Drea, I'm not surprised you guys were talking about Nika. Since I've known Drea, she says that Nika Mule is her spirit animal.
She was Nika Mule. I call Drea's games. She was absolutely Nika Mule. Like, would sacrifice her body on the defensive end. Like, forget about breathing. Drea's going to know what you had for breakfast, lunch, and dinner the day before by the time she finished guarding you 90 feet up and down the court. So I can see that.
Yeah, you can see why they translate. All right, before we let you go, because you're always so great at sort of the storytelling aspect of this too, China, give me somebody, doesn't have anything to do with their talent or their skill, give me what you think is one of the best stories as we get ready to watch these young women get drafted tonight.
Oh man, one of the best stories. You know, one of the best stories for me is definitely Rekia Jackson. You know, her mother played the game of basketball, and she is following in her mother's footsteps. And I just love that about this generation. And it helps us to appreciate the impact of Title IX and the WNBA, that now we have student athletes whose mothers played the game at a high level. And I just love that family legacy, like that story of my mom was a hooper. Now I'm out here doing my thing. And then talking to Rekia, I just think she's incredibly like intelligent. She's got great instincts. And this is one of the reasons why I've elevated her to the number two pick. I believe that at like number one and two, you got to be able to come into an organization and be a mouthpiece and be a spokesperson, especially if she does go to LA. To your point, Elle, they've lost NECA, who has been everything. She's the kind of player you can really build around, and she hasn't been talked about enough. And so in having this moment to reflect on, to me, one of the best stories is definitely Rekia, and I hope more people pay attention to her family legacy, but also just how pro-ready she is on and off the court. Like, she is very dynamic, and I look forward to following her career.
It's so funny, China. We're sitting in the green room at the national championship, and Sue and Diana are in there, and we're all just hanging, and then I hear Diana go, man, what? She's the one I'm the most excited about, if I'm being honest. And I said, what are you talking about? And they were talking about Rekia Jackson. They were talking about how excited they are to see her at the next level, and that they think her game will translate better than anybody else out of all of the names. And there are many in this draft class that she thinks that in a few years from now, we'll be saying that she was the most transformational pick in the draft. So can't wait to see all of that. If you're listening to this before 7 o'clock, you'll see China on WNBA Countdown, on ESPN, then of course on our draft coverage. We're just so excited, China, and so excited to carry all the momentum from the national championship, not only into the draft either. It's not just about, and I know there's going to be tons of Indiana Fever games on, and rightfully so, and that's going to be great, but the talent is everywhere. It's everywhere, you guys. So we're so excited that all of those amazing fans who watched incredible basketball over the next 3 weeks are going to watch that continue at the pro level.
And shout out to you, L. Duncan, who just elevated our coverage in an incredible way. You were fantastic. I'm trying to drag you into WNBA coverage this summer, but you are so official in the women's basketball world. You are in the family, and just thank you for everything that you did, taking our sport in front of the brightest lights and representing us so well. Like, I love you anyway, but I'm so grateful for everything you've done. Seriously.
I love you, China. It's always China's mission, Gary, no matter when she sees me, to make me cry. China has a way of just like saying like one sentence to you. Crying. And it's just like, I got through a whole dinner with China in Cleveland without crying. And then she just hit me with like this line at the end, and it was just waterworks. And I do want to say very quickly, when you're going into a new space, when you're replacing someone like a Maria Taylor, like China knows the insecurities were there and how I was feeling and wanting to ingratiate myself to the women's basketball world, which is one of the best families I've ever been welcomed into, by the way. But China was the very first person to tell me, like, you belong here. You are capable. You are going to do this. You're going to be great at this. Like, and I will never forget it. And I love her so much. And if anybody wanted to get excited about women's basketball, all they had to do is spend 5 minutes with the China Robinson. You're the absolute best, such a great steward for the game. And I love you, and I will see you in New York in a few hours.
Love you. Yes, Eason L. Good to see you, Gary.
All right, thanks.
All right.
Good to see you.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Peace. We got some teams in the NBA trying to cash some checks. Some got the bank account, so to speak, the roster to sort of back this up. And I think we have a handful of teams, maybe more than a handful of teams, that are going to be exposed as fraudulent, both on the Eastern Conference side and the Western Conference side, depending on who you talk to and which one of our analysts we have on our programs.
Okay, so I need you to help like walk us through this, because I was pretty sure the Hawks had wrapped up the play-in tournament. But then I saw something like they let Indiana put up like 160 piece. I was like, oh my God. So listen, honestly, I'm at the point now with my Atlanta Hawks fandom where it's like every year, despite the hype or what acquisitions we make or how the season previews, we are just destined. Our mascot, if it wasn't a Hawk, could just be play-in. The Atlanta play-ins, we are in every single year. Every year we are the play-in team. So the play-in tournament is set. We've got the number 8 Los Angeles Lakers at the number 7 New Orleans Pelicans. Am I crazy? This kind of seems like a lit matchup.
It is a lit matchup. But first, I just want to just touch on the point. L, if you wouldn't mind putting a little bit more respect on your hometown Atlanta Hawks team, because they didn't allow 160 to the Pacers. It was 157.
Oh, okay. My bad. I'm so
okay.
Sorry.
It was 157 to 115. Oh, right. I think they lost that game. But listen, the Atlanta Hawks are like that. Remember like 10 years ago, 10, 12 years ago, like that Cincinnati Bengals team that every single year for like 5 straight years, it's probably a couple fewer than that. It was the Bengals. It was the Texans AFC wild card weekend. That was the wild card matchup for like a good handful of years in our lives. And these are the Atlanta Hawks, which, by the way, they get the Chicago Bulls. And you correctly pointed out last week on the Snitch Report that I jumped the gun and eliminated them from playoff contention in October. And
in November, actually.
Mm-hmm. You, of course, being the wise one of this twosome here, were like, man, Gary, I'm pretty sure you're wrong. And I was like, no, L, I am 100% confident the Bulls aren't in the playoffs, yet still they are. Okay, so I was on SportsCenter this morning, and we had Tim Legler on, going back to the Western Conference 7-8. It's a matchup between the Pelicans and the Lakers that we saw last night. So if you missed that game, If you blink, they're playing again on Tuesday. And Tim Legler said, and we never advocate for this. We never want to actively see teams, you know, sucking or dumping or, you know, tanking for whatever reason. But Legs was like, yeah, the Lakers should intentionally lose this game because of how the top of the Western Conference is shaking out. The one seed going to the Oklahoma City Thunder, which means the two seed belong to the Denver Nuggets. And nobody wants the Denver Nuggets. So if the Lakers lose, then they fall into the play-in round. They might have to play the Oklahoma City Thunder, which they match up a little bit better then because they don't have, the Thunder don't have Nikola Jokic. So there's a lot of song and dance going on right now with a lot of the way that this bracket is kind of shaking out.
Yeah, but I mean, I always hate like that idea of like, with all due respect to Legs, I love Legs, but I hate that idea of like, pick and choose when you win or lose. Like what? We don't want to play. First of all, you're being very, very presumptuous that you could beat the Pelicans. Okay. Cause they're a good team and they beat you. And then you're being presumptuous and saying, let's just go ahead and lose, let the Pelicans in. And then we'll just take care of the Warriors or the Kings. Also teams that could beat you. The Lakers don't have the benefit of the doubt of going like, we were decimated with injury the whole year and we've been on such a hot streak. And like, so now we feel confident enough to pick and choose when we lose. Like that's not this Lakers team. They need to get wins wherever the hell they can. They lose to the Pelicans and they are in an elimination game with either the Warriors or the Kings, something they could also lose.
But if they win, they match up way, way better in an actual series against the Thunder, who Jackson just dropped us a little note there. Lakers 3-1 against the Thunder this year. And I go back to this Oklahoma City team that they are younger than over half of the field that was just in this NCAA. Well, maybe that's a little bit of an exaggeration of the number.
Right. There's but, like 18-year-olds.
I had to stop myself after the Chicago Bulls were eliminated. But the Thunder team, L, these dudes are nasty. They closed out the season against the game against the Mavericks. They played all 15 of their players. And all 15 of their players scored, and all of them played double-digit minutes. So
Who does that sound like? That sounds like South Carolina this year.
Hey, listen.
Right? They got two starting fives.
Running and gunning. All right, they're young. You know, they lost a lot of good players, but they're running and gunning, man. Watch out, these young upstarts. So I don't know. You know me, L. I'm gullible. I love a good story. Somebody can convince me that water isn't wet. And if they give me a good enough pitch, I'd be like, yeah, I think you're right. So I like this Thunder team as a one seed. But again, going back to Legs, this is the recency bias. It was just in my head. He said there's one team that's going to come out of the East. It's the Celtics. The Sixers are the only team that can give them a fair fight if Joel Embiid is healthy, full go. And then he said in the West, it's two, maybe three teams that'll come out of that. And it's headlined by the Nuggets. He likes the Timberwolves. And he likes the Thunder.
Yeah, I think the issue with the Western Conference is, A, people don't like picking Denver because choosing back-to-back champions feels boring. And also, like, Denver's just one of those, like, it's not their fault. You know, it's a small market team with one of the best players on the absolute planet, and they're coming off a championship, and people are still like, meh, meh. They don't want Denver to be a back-to-back champ. They don't. It's like the least likely, least vaunted champion. They don't want it. But then the issue is that the Timberwolves and the Thunder are both so young. Obviously, the Thunder being younger even than the Timberwolves, I think people just don't trust them. It's like, well, I don't trust that they'll be able to do what they need to do in the postseason just because they haven't had a ton of postseason experience. In the East, I mean, this is the Celtics thing to lose, right? Like, the guys in Boston are already getting all their, they're getting all the championship gear. They're taking off. They're ready for the finals, wherever it'll be.
Do you like doing your Jerry Jones or your prototypical masshole better?
Jerry, just because I feel more comfortable with a Southern accent.
Yeah.
Over time, like my Boston accent starts out strong and then it starts to eventually take a turn. Shout out to all Patriots Day in Boston, Boston Marathon being run as we speak. So shout out to the folks up there. It's huge.
That's a good segue, Elle. That's a good segue for your life. Could you complete a marathon in under 5 hours?
No.
I'll break the... Whoa. First of all...
I don't have to think about it. Gary, you went to a marathon with me. You saw me calling all of them suckers. I mean, heroes, but suckers.
Yeah, no, that's true. And also, I've walked through the halls with you. at ESPN and you find every wall. You,
yeah, I do.
You run into every wall. So something tells me on those cobblestone streets in Boston, you'd still find your way to run into a wall. But you didn't. I got to hype you up. Listen, you're coming off your birthday weekend. You should be feeling on top of the world. All right. So I didn't like the pessimism there. You didn't allow me to give you your stipulations.
I have to take 36 vitamins every morning just to function as a normal person, just to get up and walk downstairs. So clearly I'm not running any marathons. And that's
Well, I've been to your and Omar's house and you have many stairs. So listen, you've already built in training. So 26.2 miles in 5.5 hours. Listen, that amounts to 1 mile every 13 minutes.
Yeah.
You can walk a mile in 20. You can walk 1 mile in 20. You can't finish 26.2 in 5.5 hours.
I don't think so. Because here's the thing. I think I could probably give you 15 miles and then I'm my feet are hurting. My joints are aching. I'm dead. No.
What happened?
It would take me 25 minutes to walk the rest of those miles. Absolutely not. Can I use wheelies?
Okay.
Can I use a scooter?
You're talking about the Heelys. All right. You're talking about the Incognito.
Oh, Heelys. Yeah, those things.
Yep. Put some respect on those. No, you can't. Because guess why? I have confidence that you could complete a marathon.
There's no way. Not in 5 hours. You got to give me 7 hours.
That includes five and
an
a half.
Hour break in between with a massage. It includes however long it takes me to call an Uber, get in the Uber and get dropped off closer to the finish line. I'm not doing it. No. And here's the thing. I see people and okay, it's inspiring, whatever, on TikTok. They're like, I decided at 50 years old to run my first marathon because I want to prove there's no such thing as limitations or whatever bullshit. That's cool. I appreciate that for some people. Okay, not me. Okay. I'm going to try to expand in different areas and prove that age ain't nothing but a number. Shout out to Aaliyah. In other ways, it's not going to be running a marathon. No, thank you. I hate running. I hate it.
Okay. And I'm going to end on this. Because by all accounts, everything that I read, I'll never experience it, okay, for many reasons. But by all accounts, people say that giving birth is the hardest, most painful thing anybody can ever go through. So you're telling me that a marathon would be harder to do, more painful than giving birth? Basically, you're saying giving birth is a better time than running a marathon?
No, totally different muscles that you're flexing. That's like saying they say a mother's strength is unparalleled, so you should be able to lift that 600-pound car. Get the fuck out of here. No, you're comparing apples to oranges. No. Was it difficult? Hell yeah, it was hard, but I had to lay there. It's not in my strong suit to run. I've never been a runner. I don't like doing it. I can't. I don't have the endurance for that. Did I have the endurance to be in labor for 3 days? I did. I was in labor for 3 days. However,
collectively?
Yes. However, that was to deliver my 3 days. And then it's 4.5 hours of pushing. They call it after that because the baby's just clearly not going to come. So I had to do an emergency C-section. It was a time, but it was also for the purpose of bringing my child into the world. I tapped into a different strength. Okay. For running a marathon for shits and giggles, just to say I did it. What?
So could you walk a marathon in 3 days? Congratulations.
Yes, that I could do.
Congratulations, yes. Elle. Hell yeah. And we got there.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
L. On this episode of the L. Duncan Show multi-platform program, we've saved the best for last. I know that you were like wanting to get to Masters talk. Okay. You wanted to talk about what went down at Augusta.
When does that start?
All right. Yep. Exactly. Next April, because we have put a pretty little bow on the 88th edition of, and we have a winner who's been here before, Scottie Scheffler. And this is, this is how I want to pose this question to you, because all weekend, as Scottie Scheffler wins his second green jacket, he was saying, I'm going to leave no matter what, because he and his wife, Meredith, were expecting a baby, their first. Oh. All right. And he goes, if I get the call, my wife can go into labor at any moment. I will leave this tournament, because he said, you only become a dad for the first time once. He said, I'll be back at many of these.
Clearly, he's already won before.
That's what I'm saying. If Omar is the leader in the clubhouse at the Masters Golf Tournament, and you are going into labor with Eva, are you holding off on that phone call? Or are you saying, no, damn it, Omar, you need to get here now?
Hello. I'm pretty sure Wu-Tang Clan said it best. Cream, cash rules everything around me. You better go get that check. How much is that purse for the Masters? You better get that check.
Hey. 3.6 million is what he took home.
No, guess who's not going to know that you weren't there? Eva, okay? Because she's an infant and she won't know. We will Photoshop, with that $3 million, we'll Photoshop your ass into the photos. Absolutely
okay, but,
not.
But time out, It's less about that. What if as a dad, as a father, as a husband, he wanted to be there hand in hand with you for three straight days, apparently, 4.5 hours of pushing. And he wanted to be there, not for you, but for selfish reasons. He wanted to be there to witness the birth of his first child. You're not going to give him that as the father?
I'd be like, you know what these children need? They need diapers and college education paid for. Go on and stay to the Masters and get that thing popping. Here's my thing. If it's the first round, you know, if this happens on a Thursday, sure, you don't know you're in contention. If it's Sunday at the Masters and you've got, what did he have, a 4-stroke lead? You better keep your ass there.
Yeah,
absolutely not. Because you can PJ to wherever I am. I don't know where Scottie Scheffler lives in the off season, but I imagine it's somewhere like Florida. Don't they all live there?
He's in Dallas.
Okay,
Dallas. He's a UT guy.
Super accessible from Atlanta. Pop over in 2.5 hours, you're in Dallas. Absolutely not. No, sir. No, sir. And in fact, if I thought he would even do something that silly, I wouldn't tell his ass I was in labor.
Okay, and that's the thing, because he would be mad. Like, what if he gets to Dallas and like, here's your son or daughter. They're 4 days old.
I mean, let him know as soon as it was over, Gary. I wouldn't wait for him to show up and the baby's there. I'm just saying, I'd wait till he was done. And then I'd text him and be like, you got your green jacket and also a cigar because your baby's here.
Yeah! Here she is. Okay, so that was the story of the this weekend with Scottie Scheffler, second green jacket in 3 years. But you have certainly seen the memes. Tiger Woods, 24 straight cuts. And the moment that he had with a tree, really, if you can pop up the pictures here for our viewing audience, this is not a moment that he had with the talking tree and the talking stick. No, Vern Lundquist is behind this beautiful, beautiful tree here.
Okay.
And the memes, Elle, that came from this were the best part of the Masters, because certainly it wasn't Tiger Woods' golf game. Like me when I recycle paper, just a nice handshake.
Yeah, because for the non-viewing audience, it's just a tree, and then you see an older white man arm coming out of the tree and nothing else, and then Tiger shaking it. But that's all you can see, is just it looks like the tree has an arm and Tiger is shaking it. So my favorite was the dude that I actually know, Wes Blankenship. It was like Tiger handshake Woods.
It's so good.
Good one.
No, it's so good. 24 straight cuts for Tiger. Hopefully he'll be back next year.
No, not okay. I'm sick of this. I'm sorry. You guys, like, stop it. Stop it. I understand he's still good for the ratings, but at some point they had to stop with Dick Clark too. It was like, stop wheeling him out there. Like, it's enough. We got to move on.
No,
I'm sorry. No. Like, Tiger's like, I could still be in the hunt. I could still be in the running. That man can barely finish these courses. He can barely walk the course. Like, at this point, that's the win. The win is, oh my God, Tiger was able to walk to Sunday. Like, that's the win.
But
let this man live.
No, he is. Well, don't let him live LIV. All right. Do not let him go to live LIV. There's a built-in check in the weekend of making the cut.
Oh, so we think Tiger Woods needs that check from the Masters.
No. Not check money-wise, even though he did walk away with $44,000. Watch out.
That's running around money.
But I'm saying, as long as there's a cut line in place and he earns a spot on the weekend, he is still on the hunt. So what I'm saying is he needs one more Masters. He needs another major. He'll be back.
No, he doesn't. This is embarrassing. Years ago when he won the Masters, and probably when no one ever thought he would win it again. That was enough. He should have walked away then. We've got to stop with this fascination. Just because the game needs Tiger this bad, like now the bets and the parlays are like whether he can just finish the round. This is not Tiger. Stop.
It's easy money.
It's not. We're still holding, like we're still acting like 2019 is possible again for him. He's been in a horrific car accident and had more surgeries. He's older. He can't do it anymore. I'm sorry. This has gotten like really uncomfortable to watch, frankly. It is. As uncomfortable as watching him take his hat off. It's like, bro, you got to choose.
Okay.
You got to choose, bro. You got to choose. Dude. You either got to go full Dr. Leonard and get the plugs or you got to shave it.
That's a violation. I cannot.
It's become too much. But I just like this is like let him be the honorary, like let him be the mascot. Why can't he go out there and like hit the first? Don't they have like honorary like tee offs or some like let him do that. Let him be a great steward for the game like he's been. This idea that he can still win these things when he can barely walk them. Like, stop.
It's
bad.
Many layers. You can't have Tiger Woods be the mascot of this golf tournament.
Why?
Don't you remember the start of this show when you were forced to play Ride Freaky in elementary school? Elle, we're full circle on this podcast. I can't believe you went for his hair or whatever's left of it. I can't believe you did that.
Yeah, we did. Before we get out of here, it was actually really funny. Before we, when me and Gary, who we hosted SportsCenter all together last week, and that was super fun, Gare Bear, we were joking that they kept sort of dividing like highlights between who was the black person and who was the black white person.
Wait, what did I have? Oh, I had the Shohei Ohtani.
Ohtani.
I had all the Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, you had all Shohei. I had OJ Simpson.
You had OJ, and then
Gary hits us with a what?
Who gets the Tiger Woods highlight? hey, who's getting the Tiger Woods highlight? Does L get the first half? Do I get the first half? Like, I don't know. How do we play this? But we never had to come to that point.
I know. Well, listen, Dave Chappelle put it best, man. I think we drafted him years ago, although I'm not sure that we would repeat that same pick. Gary Streisky, we're back Thursday. Thursday, a very special show. You will be coming to... Nope, I jumped ahead 2 weeks. You will not be coming to us from Miami. We will just be in the building.
Oh, but spoiler alert, the L Duncan show... is going to Miami.
Bienvenido a Miami. That's right, guys.
When the heat is on.
F1, we are loading. That's going to be in 2 weeks from now, though. Definitely not this Thursday. We are both in studio this Thursday. We will have a full NFL draft preview as we inch closer to the NFL draft and a mock draft at that. So join us on Thursday. In the meantime and in between time, remember to rate us and subscribe and tell everybody about us and tell them how much you love this show so we can keep doing it for you. Ciao.